Welcome to the Greek Life Podcast, a podcast about fraternity and sorority life in North America. My name's Matt, and I'm a fraternity veteran, and it is my goal to help you grow and improve your chapter, as well as keep you up to date on all the important trends happening in Greek life today. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Roll Tide. Before I get into the interview, I want to talk a little bit about Greek life at the University of Alabama. There are 24 sororities, over 30 fraternities, and a whopping 11,000 students in Greek life at the University of Alabama. Since 2011, they've held the title of being the biggest Greek community in the nation, becoming the lifeblood of their school spirit. And for 150 years, fraternity and sorority life has been synonymous with the university, in a community known for excelling in academics, leadership, and service. The school practically pioneered Greek life in the South, with dozens of historic chapters and rituals. And who could forget the sprawling fraternity and sorority houses there that sparked jealousy among Greeks across the nation? It's been an honor to cover this and interview Clint Coulter today. I hope you guys enjoy. All right, welcome to the Greek Life Podcast. Today we have the Assistant Director of the Office of Fraternity and Sorority Life at the University of Alabama. Clint, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, Matthew, thank you. Clint Coulter, Assistant Director and Interfraternity Council Advisor at the University of Alabama. Been in my position since March of 2020, so start of COVID, which was exciting times.
That is quite a time to start with FSL. Was that like right before COVID hit, or was that like during
COVID? It was like right at the start of COVID, when every institution in the nation decided to shut their doors and switch to like the remote learning phase. And so I took on the position not knowing that's what was going to happen, right? And so the first day of the job, I get a phone call from my director saying, hey, we're so glad to have you on staff. By the way, we need you to pack your computer that just put in your office and take it home because we are closing our doors due to COVID. We don't know how long this will take. Hopefully it will just take a couple of weeks, but ended up being several months.
How did you come to be a professional in fraternity and sorority life?
So that's quite interesting. So I was actually working in housing beforehand and as an area coordinator. And great experience, loved it, thought I was going to kind of move my way up in the housing realm. But several students that I met with in housing were Greek life, and I'm always one to benefit and advocate for our students, even times when they may make some decisions that go against university policy. I still turn to them and help them kind of overcome those obstacles that they face during those times. And so the dean of students recognized that, and he asked to meet with me. And through our conversation, he asked if I would be interested in this position. And I originally told him, I at the time, I had no Greek life experience. I went to a private institution where I was involved in a social club, and come to find out, being in Greek life and working in Greek life in the last almost 3 years now, that social clubs that exist at the private institution I attended it's very relatable to how some of the fraternities do their recruitment and new member education and whatnot here at the University of Alabama. So all that to say, like he just asked me if I would be interested, and kind of thought about it, prayed about it, and then went ahead and applied for it. And here I am 2.5 years later. So
great. So can you tell me a little bit about the University of Alabama and why FSL is a place students want to be there?
Yeah, I mean, University of Alabama has got a rich history, rich culture. They, especially in Greek life, right? I mean, you've got fraternities back in the 1800s that started here. SAE is one of them, right? They started their Mother Mu fraternity, as they love to say here. It started way back in the 1800s, and they're of our successful organizations. And there's several other successful organizations, actually all of them. I shouldn't just pick one out. They're all very successful in their own way, regardless if that's through events, if it's through philanthropy, if it's through just the brotherhood, the networking. It's all very successful here at the university. We have 34 fraternities, and we are recognized as one of the largest Greek organizations in the nation, right? So not only are our fraternities exceptionally doing an exceptional job in the way that they work as a unit, but also, and as a council, but then you also have the APA, the NPHC and UGC councils that do phenomenal jobs. And so we provide that, that culture here and create that fraternity, sorority, Greek life community, if you will, that is speaks volume, I think, to the nation, right? Because everyone recognizes University of Alabama. We've got a large magnifying glass on us and we know that. And so we try to do everything that we can to show the world really that we're defeating that stereotype that exists about fraternities and sororities, that we are more than just that. We excel in various other avenues, such as our philanthropy, our academics. Like, no one talks about our academics. Our women have, our APA, for example, have had a cumulative of above a 3.5 GPA in the last 20 something years. I think even more than that, I think longer than that. And I don't think that you could say that really at most other institutions, right? Now, I haven't done the research or the data on that. So there might be other institutions that have done something similar, but our women are doing exceptionally well academically and our guys are climbing too. So all that to say, we excel in a lot of areas. And I think that's one of the main reasons why students want to come here to the University of Alabama is, yeah, we have a great athletic program and people want to be a part of that. And they want to come to the South because of the culture and the community. And a lot of, we do have a large out-of-state student population that comes to the University of Alabama. And when I ask them why they came here, a lot of them first say, the weather, they love the cold, but they don't love the 8 feet of snow here in the South. If it even is, if it's on the news that there might be a hint of snow or ice, everything shuts down. And I think the students got that. So, but yeah, other than the athletics and the weather, right? Fraternity and sorority life is a big recruitment tool that is utilized in our, I think, in the university's enrollment strategies on top of academics and everything else that the university has to offer.
Yeah, that's great. I'm in Connecticut right now. It hasn't really started snowing yet, but I'm hunkering down. I'm ready for it. I know it's coming. It's going to come fast.
Yeah, I think it's like 79 here.
Oh my gosh.
Today, I think of the weather. And then next week it drops down to the 40s. So the weather all changes quite a bit.
Do you also advise the Interfraternity Council there? How has your experience been working with those student leaders and the gentlemen on that council? What are these guys doing on a daily basis?
So that's the best experience. I think working with the Interfraternity Council is the best experience I've ever had in higher education. Nothing against my housing experience and nothing against the people that I work with, because I work with some and have worked with some phenomenal people. But the ISC executive councils that I've had since I've started this position, and especially this year's upcoming council, do such an exceptional job to advocate and benefit the interfraternity community, right? There are the first, I think after like 5 or 6 days after the IFC exec was selected, had their first meeting, right? And we had a 2-hour meeting to discuss what we're looking forward to, but we set goals, we set events, we set all these things for what we're going to accomplish in the spring, and then also kind of what we're wanting to accomplish in the fall of 2023. So they're forward thinking, they're very positive and optimistic. We've always experienced bumps in the road from various entities, if you will, but they have always overcome those. They've never allowed something to defeat them, if that makes sense. And so they've always been optimistic and always had just a good head on their shoulders. And so I think the IFC executive councils that have been selected have always shown their worth, or proven their worth, I should say, and proven their success really with the university and with the IFC community.
So I want to pivot a little bit and talk about brotherhood. It's kind of a catchphrase. It's a catch-all. People talk a lot about it in recruitment to try to get new members to come in and experience what brotherhood is. But I think people might be wondering, what does brotherhood actually mean? What does it mean to you? Why are individuals searching for that so much? Why is that such a big thing in recruitment that individuals are actually looking for?
Well, I think that's a great question, Matthew. Community is one of the first things that come to mind, right? Is that the individuals who join a fraternity and are searching for that brotherhood, they're searching for a community, they're searching for a group of guys that they can really connect with and build relationships and network, right? Networking is one of the top things that anybody can do to find a, to kind of discover their future, right? Where they're going to go in life, whatever it is that they choose to get their degree in and what they want to pursue in life and for employment after they graduate from the university. The networking piece in itself is so vital. And when you have somebody join a chapter that's 150 plus members and have a very enriched alumni group or alumni foundation and whatnot, going to have this large networking tool to help you be successful when you graduate from the institution. And you can just reach out to anybody in your any one of your friends or you, anyone in the fraternity that you've joined, I should say, about, hey, I'm kind of searching for this. Can you help me out? And you're going to have multiple guys, not just one. Or you're going to have one guy that knows so many people that'd be like, oh yeah, well, let me get you in contact with this person, or let me get you in, or you know what? I know this person, he's hiring somebody right now. You'd be a great fit for that person. Right. And so I think that's one thing, but I think even bigger than that, I would say mental health, right? The mental health in today's society, in today's nation, I shouldn't say just in the United States, right? It's in the world. Like, mental health is a big issue. And I should say mental health related issues is a big issue. It's a large issue and it's a big hot topic in higher education, right? So students are coming in with anxiety, they're coming in with depression, they're coming in with trying to find that sense of community, that sense of belonging. Students are struggling, right? And COVID has a lot to do with that. But even before COVID, that no one really, I feel like, talks about anymore, is mental health was already an issue and has been an issue for years. And again, like, COVID just, I think, escalated those issues, right? And so these students that are coming in, it's important to have that community. It's important to find that brotherhood and connect with and guys who, you know, you can go to and talk to when you are struggling. I think the example I always use with the guys when I talk to them about mental health is like, you may find your relationship here at the university. You may come in, and when I say a relationship, like a partner or whatnot, like, you may have a pre-existing relationship coming to college that may end when you're in college, or you may find somebody in college and think that is the person you will be with for the rest of your life, and it doesn't work out, right? You get in that relationship 2-3 years later, that relationship ends. That can be hard on a lot of guys, and we don't talk about it enough among men because society and culture has taught us men to just say, brush it off, or, oh, there's plenty of women out in the sea, you'd be fine. And that's not in me personally, I don't agree with that. I think, yeah, guys got to talk about the things that they struggle with. They got to talk about their feelings. And I know that's like again, that's one of the words that guys are like, ooh, feelings, gross, right? Like, I don't want to talk about my feelings. But the reality is they need to open up. They need to share with other men, like, hey, I'm struggling with this. Like, this is something that I'm battling. I need to talk to you about it. And on the other side is the guys, part of a brother is listening, right? Listening to those brothers that are coming to you and asking, telling you that they're going through some struggles and life challenges. Or even there's several brothers that I know here at the university that they have someone in their family pass away, mom, a dad, or a grandparent that they were very close with. They need to talk about that. And a brotherhood, especially here at the University of Alabama, I haven't ran into one issue where a guy has told another, or a brother has told another brother, brush it off, you're fine, get over it, right? I've seen these men where there has been an impact in some student's life where they have flooded to this guy, make sure that they are okay, to make sure that they are with them. You know, one incident that I won't get into details about that occurred, and it was a pretty significant issue that happened with one of our members, and this community of men, they got together and they were up at their house all night, throughout the night, just surrounding this one individual in particular who was close to somebody who had unfortunately passed on, that they had stayed with this individual throughout the entire night. That's what a brotherhood is, right? And not to say that doesn't exist in other areas, but especially here at the university, and I think at other fraternities and organizations in the nation, I would say that definitely does exist. And that's the importance of a brotherhood. And on top of that too, I know this is long-winded to your question, but the other thing is academics. If you, I think a good comes to college or should go to college to earn their education, right? And I know when you're a freshman or sophomore, sometimes, you know, that goes in one ear and out the other to some of the students, but because they're also here to have a good time, they're also here to have fun, and we want them to have fun. We want them to have a good time. But I think having leaders in your community, in each organization, chapter presidents, vice presidents, academic chairs, social chairs, whatever the position may be, leaders should also be mentors, and most of them are. And that also is an example of a brotherhood, guys who are leaders in the organization to look at their freshmen, their sophomores, and their juniors and seniors too, and make sure that they are doing an exceptional job academically, right? Because it makes the university, it does make the university look good, but it also makes the chapter look good. If we can come back and say, look at our cumulative GPA, we had a 3.459 cumulative GPA. We were on top of it. We made sure that our guys were at study hall. We made sure that if anybody, when we received midterm grade reports, that if anybody is not doing well academically, that we are meeting with those individuals and making sure that they are, replacing their academics as a priority. And so in a nutshell, I'd say community, mental health, networking, academics, those are the main things of what a brotherhood means, at least to me. And what
So we established how fantastic a brotherhood can be. You shared some awesome stories. I'm curious, and I think some people listening might be curious, how can a chapter really foster that brotherhood? You talked about how a brother swarmed a brother who was going through a difficult issue. How can a chapter really get to that point? What are some things they can do if they're searching for a stronger brother or a stronger bond?
Right. Well, I think one thing that, and we kind of talked about this before, Matthew, is a lot of chapters don't want to work with their national headquarters, right? Because there's this fear for some reason that headquarters are the spawn of the existence of the chapter. But at the same time, that's why the chapter is there, right? Is because nationals helped get them placed or established at whatever institution they may be at. But I think the national headquarters, from the conversations I have had, at least with several national headquarters, is they have all these resources and they have all this these leadership kind of guidelines, if you will, to help these men be successful, right? And I think that's one way that chapters and their presidents and just the organizations can do somewhat of a better job. And nationals too has to recognize that there needs to be some improvement among a chapter and then provide that assistance where it is needed. So getting those resources from national headquarters is always something that we recommend and with our guys here at the university. The other thing I would say is reach out to the Greek Life office. We have so much worse, and we, of course, we're all, at least here at the university, and I know at most other places, there are individuals in their positions for a reason, because they are there to benefit and advocate for their students, right? So the university administrators, especially in the Greek Life office, are going to have the tools to equip these organizations to help strengthen those resources or strengthen their leadership to gain that kind of brotherhood and define what brotherhood should be, right? Chapter advisors are another thing. If organizations don't have a good chapter advisor, then I recommend they go find somebody who really cares for them. I've been in this, like I said, I've been in this position for 2.5 years, and I've recognized the chapter advisors that do give like a care, or I was going to say something else there, but who actually care about their organization and pour into their organization. I mean, to them, it's volunteer work, right? So, but they are pouring into these young guys because they used to be in their position and they want to make sure that they are being successful and they want to define what leadership is. So chapters who don't have a solid advisor that, you know, is someone just there to sign off on things, then I recommend they find somebody else. I recommend that they find somebody that truly is going to be in their corner when it gets rough, when the times get hard, if you will, because they will, and they always do. And one organization may do a great job one year, and the next year they may have some very big struggles. And if that happens, it happens, but they've got to have the people in position to help them overcome those challenges. And if you don't, like I said, if you don't have a good relationship with your national headquarters, if you don't have a good relationship with your chapter advisors, and if you don't have a good relationship with the university administration or their administrators, it might be a rough year for that chapter. And so all that to say, reach out to those organizations or reach out to those resources. And then also the Interfraternity Council, that's the big one really, is the Interfraternity Councils are there to advocate for their fraternities, right? They have, again, they have the resources. And I don't know why we've gotten out of the asking question phase in life. I feel like it's more so than not that we've made this assumption, if you will, to just do and ask for forgiveness later. And I used to be like an 18, 19, 20 year old. So there were times where I was like, yeah, let's just do it and ask for forgiveness later. But what I've learned over the years is really asking the question and asking questions, I should say. And the good things, especially here at the university and the Interfraternity Council, our office, national headquarters, no one's going to just give you a flat out no. Like, they're, if they don't know the answer to something, they will find the answer, or at least somebody who is a good employee or a good advisor, a good IFC counsel or a good headquarters, they're going to find the answer for the organization to help them create that strong foundation, that strong brotherhood.
Man, that's all I got for you today. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, absolutely, Matthew. I really enjoyed it. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to this interview with Clint Coulter. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Greek Life Podcast. And thank you so much for listening and supporting this podcast. Stay tuned. We'll be coming out with episodes every single week. See you soon.